Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white, drink blue and light. And don't forget to try the new Labatt Blue Light Seltzer Variety Pack, available at retailers throughout Pennsylvania.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Ross Tucker, and it's time for Ask Ross. This is where we take your questions for Ross, and then the best question wins the KSN polo shirt. And if you want to submit a question to Ross, it's really easy. You just need to download our app, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask Ross button, or you can email us at info@ksnsports.net. All right, Ross, you ready for the questions?
I am. Love this.
Let's get to it. Let's start with Kevin in Milwaukee. Kevin says, Ross, I'm curious if there's anything you would prefer that Penn State did differently scheme-wise just because you maybe enjoy watching that style better. For example, running an I formation instead of the spread zone read, or running a 3-4 defense instead of a 4-3. I know for me, I wish we went under center once in a while just because I believe defenses bite the hardest on play action from under center. Overall, though, I do enjoy the spread. So what about it, Ross? Would you like to see something different?
It's a great question, and I'm a little old school, Jim, so I'm probably the wrong person to ask this about. I really enjoy a lot of the under center run game and play action off of it. I really enjoy seeing teams run power. I think there are some fun runs out of two back where you have lead weak and you have the fullback leading up. I actually think it's funny. You know, Penn State used to get a lot of value out of their fullbacks, Jim. I mean,
yes.
Tim Manoa and I can go back to Tim Manoa and Steve Smith back in 85 and 86. Then even John Whitman and Brian Milne.
Yep.
I mean, Penn State was churning out NFL fullbacks, Whitman and Brian and Brian Milne. And then I just, there's a lot you can do at that. Sam Gash, my teammate with the Buffalo Bills. There's a lot you can do with that. And I just feel like, I know the world has changed a little bit, Jim, but like when I think of Penn State football, and this is the old school me, that's what I think about. I think about the offensive line kicking that other team's butt. And I think about great tailbacks running a lot of time ISOs behind fullbacks. And look, the funny thing is you look at like the Patriots or the 49ers or some of these teams, the fullback's kind of in vogue again a little bit in the NFL. Like some of these teams are using fullbacks very effectively, in large part because defenses aren't used to going against them, you know? There's a lot, stylistically, I'd like to see Penn State do differently. But I also realize, and I've talked to enough coaches about this, that, man, the spread stuff, the quarterback run stuff, it's just easier to get yards. You know, like the thought process, Jim, is if you're going to go like fullback and play power and stuff, you better be more physically dominant. I think a lot of times Penn State was. But to be honest with you, I feel like that's what Wisconsin does. Like Wisconsin is what Penn State used to be with the tight ends and the fullback, and they're going to run, play action for a big chunk. I enjoy watching Wisconsin because of that.
I always wonder, Ross, if everything old becomes new again, if we'll see a new style, if we'll see, like you said, the fullback coming into vogue again. Remember, I remember years ago, late 60s, early 70s, the wishbone. And the best teams in the country were Texas, then Nebraska and Oklahoma. And that's how you were the best team in the country. And now we see, of course, with the academies, Army and Navy. That's still a fun watch, by the way. Since we're talking running game, let's go to Joe and Jeanette, PA, who says, as a fan, I'm always dumbfounded when my team can't run the ball. When this happens, it always seems like the opposing team does it so effortlessly. Ross, the question is, what makes a good running attack? Attitude, talent, repetition, technique, play calling. How do you build the running attack, and is it more the offensive line or the running back?
It is all of those things, and I would say unequivocally, Jim, the offensive line is more important. You know, that's sort of been proven at the NFL level and even in college. Like, Alabama has great running backs, Jim, but whoever they put in there gets yards. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, I'd like to see someday how many yards I could get if I was playing running back for Alabama. So offensive line is definitely more important. And I think that there's a lot of factors to it. I think even the quarterback's a factor. You're like audibling you into a more favorable run front, right? So you get lined up there, and you might want to run power to the right side, to the strong side, but they might be overloaded that way. So you can audible and check to lead weak, and it gets the offensive linemen to have better angles. It's never just one thing. The thing I will say about it, though, is, yes, it's talent. Yes, it's all those tenacity. A lot of it is repetition. A lot of it is those offensive linemen working together in concert to get up to the second level and just having a real familiarity with each other and repping those plays over and over again. I think that's a big part of it.
To your point, Ross, on the value of the offensive line and tying in the how we talked about Penn State played years ago, do you remember the game where they had several injuries at running back and they took a defensive back and made him the running back? And I think he ran for like 200 yards. And I don't know why, in the back of my head, the name Shelly Hammonds comes in. Do you remember that name from Penn State from years ago?
Absolutely, yeah. Now, Shelly, I feel like Shelly was a running back and then switched to defensive back. And then maybe they just needed him in a pinch. But, I mean, Jim, I have Shelly Hammond's autograph, or I did at some point. So, yes, I remember Shelly. Anytime you mention a guy from 85 to 93, not only do I know that guy, do I remember him? I have his autograph somewhere.
We're both showing our age here, Ross. I'll have to look it up and see if I could find that game, or maybe one of our listeners will send us the information. Maybe they remember it better. All right, let's move on here. David from Lancaster says, the head coach and position coaches get a lot of public attention, but who are some of the behind-the-scenes people who play a large role for the players on a daily basis?
So there's a bunch. It's unbelievable. Like, if you just look at Penn State staff, it's unbelievable. And all these programs are like it. And so the strength and conditioning staff is critical, much more so than at the NFL level. You know, these are still 18 to 23-year-old men who are really changing their bodies and really growing and developing as athletes. You know, when you get to the NFL, Jim, it's really more about injury prevention. It's really that's the primary focus. Is you don't really get much stronger in the NFL. Now, you might develop your first year or two. I put on 10 more pounds and got a little stronger my first or second year. But then the season's so long and there's so much going on that you always have an injury. So then, like, the season ends January, but then you don't do anything because of your injury till February something. Before you know it, it's late March and you're back up there and you start doing off-season practices. And it's just harder to really get stronger. It's harder to really build up your body the way you want to. So there's a strength staff. Penn State has a huge recruiting staff. Huge. And these guys aren't the guys that necessarily help the players day to day, but they help the program a lot, making sure that they are in contact with any and all potential recruits.
The name that I want to throw out there is Dwight Gault. He's the head of the training staff. And I believe he's the one coach who is allowed to interact with the players during the off season when the regular coaches can't. Isn't that the case?
Yes. Yeah. And that's why, like, the guy that was at Iowa and got dismissed, it's why they make so much money, is because they're around the players more than anybody, number one. And number two, they have the biggest impact on changing the athletic profile of these players. And Iowa, for years, would get these offensive linemen, Jim, that were 6'5", 6'6", 240, 245 high school wrestlers or basketball players, build them up to 300-pound monsters. I remember one year, all five Iowa offensive linemen got drafted like in the first four rounds. They annihilated Penn State. I mean, they ran all – it was embarrassing. They ran all over Penn State. That was probably like late 90s, maybe early 2000s, when Penn State wasn't very good, by the way.
Again, just emphasizing that value of the offensive line, right, Ross?
Correct. All right. There you go.
Let's go to Dave in Lehigh Valley, who says, Ross, who do you think is Coach Franklin's most important assistant coach that he could least afford to lose to another school?
Ooh, wow, that's a good one, Jim.
I think part of what makes it difficult is, you know, do you place more value on a coordinator than a position coach?
It's also kind of hard to tell how much each guy really does on the recruiting part of it. Because the recruiting part of it's significant. I would have told you if you asked me a year ago, I probably would have said Sean Spencer, Jim. I probably would have said Sean Spencer. And then they lost him. You know? And I thought the defensive line took a step back as a result. And Spencer's always been a very good recruiter as well. I don't know. It's hard to say Yursich. He just got there, hasn't done anything yet. I guess I'd say Brent Pry, but I don't even know if that's true.
How about Juwan Sider? Seems to have done a good job coaching up the running backs, and there always seems to be more good ones coming in.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. But then, you know, they were doing pretty good at that position before he got there too. You know, Saquon Barkley, have you heard of him?
He ended up pretty good, didn't he? All right, that is it for quarter number three and Ask Ross. Stick around. Bob and Andy will be back for quarter number four, and we'll name our winner.
In a world of over 100 hard seltzers swimming in a sea of sameness and mediocrity, a hero emerges. Introducing Seagram's Hard Seltzer, the greatest of all time. So go ahead, awaken your taste buds and bring the thrill back to bubbles with fruit-infused flavor combinations that are refreshingly new and deliciously different. Seagram's Hard Seltzer. Kick it with the goat.
Flavored malt beverages. Enjoy responsibly. The Seagram Beverage Company, Rochester, New York.
It won't be long before we get back outside for those cookouts and tailgates. And the best way to get ready is at thetailgateclub.com. We feature your favorites from 409 Tailgate with their Peachy Paws barbecue sauce and famous Bloody Mary mix. We also have great condiments you won't find at the grocery store, like bacon ketchup and hot banana mustard. How about sauces like raspberry chipotle and roasted red chili and honey? Head over to thetailgateclub.com. That's thetailgateclub.com for all these amazing products and more.